Joe Royo.
Local news and timeless hits. WRJN, Music and Ocean.
Here's news from CBS, 7 o'clock.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. More Los Angelinos are returning to find homes and neighborhoods wiped out from some of the most destructive wildfires in California history. Avanti Persona grew up in the Palisades.
My elementary school is gone. My high school is half gone. Most of my friends have lost their homes.
Death toll up to at least 24, and the flames are still raging. L.A. County Fire Chief Anthony Marone.
Elevated critical fire weather conditions will continue through Wednesday.
KCBS reporter Matt Bigler is in Malibu.
With the return of Santa Ana winds this week, residents in mandatory evacuation zones won't be able to return home until at least Thursday. L.A. City Councilmember Tracy Park says fire and utility crews need to be able to operate freely in the burn zones,
so they can stabilize the conditions on the ground.
Over 150,000 people in Los Angeles County have been evacuated. For those that didn't suffer any burn damage, State Assemblymember Jackie Irwin says it's not clear yet if the government will pay their housing costs.
We still do not have confirmation that there might be some reimbursement from FEMA.
The Senate begins confirmation hearings tomorrow for former President, President-elect Trump's cabinet picks. Republican John Barrasso tells CBS's Face the Nation.
President Trump said the number one goal for the Senate needs to be to get his team in place.
Among them, Pete Hegseth for Defense Secretary, Democratic Senator Mark Kelly on Face the Nation.
He just does not seem to have the qualifications.
Denmark is extending an invitation to President-elect Trump to discuss his concerns about security interests in the Arctic and his vow to extend U.S. frontiers to Greenland, a Danish territory. Speaking in Israel today, the foreign minister said his country is ready to ensure, quote, legitimate American interests. A new push is on to get a ceasefire deal in Gaza. Correspondent Cammie McCormick reports.
The White House has been focused on getting a deal, and President Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday. President-elect Trump has also been pushing for an agreement before he takes office. Now an official close to the talks says there is potential for real progress. They're waiting for Hamas approval. Hamas has been blamed for many failed efforts in the past. The coming days are seen as critical to ending the fighting.
The maiden voyage of Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin rocket was a no-go at Cape Canaveral early this morning.
We are standing down today's launch attempt to troubleshoot a vehicle subsystem issue.
The countdown clock was reset repeatedly before blastoff of the New Glenn was officially scrubbed. No word on when they'll try again. S&P futures down 47. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
From the WRJN Radio Park Newsroom, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Warming centers are open as temperatures take a dip. The National Weather Service has wind chills below zero today and through the early part of the week. Many area libraries, community centers, and government buildings are serving as places for those in need to warm up. Snow returns later in the week. We'll have the latest coming up in the forecast. Before the barn burned, someone said they heard an explosion. There were two buildings on fire in that big Racine County fire Saturday. No injuries were reported and no animals were impacted. There were classic cars, RVs, and other vehicles being stored in the barns along 6 Mile Road in Caledonia. The cause of that major fire is still under investigation. Fire crews from all over the area were called in to help. We're working on learning more about what led to that standoff in Racine yesterday. Police say at around 7 yesterday morning, a man with a gun prompted the situation at a home near Geneva and Hagerer. 5 hours went by in that standoff position, with crisis negotiators able to get the man into custody at around noon. And that's news on WRJN. I'm Stuart J. Waddles. News at the top and bottom of the hour, or anytime at WRJN.com.
The Packers season ends in Philly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers losing to the Eagles 22-10 in the first round of the playoffs. Several Packers players on offense had to leave the game with injuries. Left guard Elgton Jenkins' arm went numb with a stinger. Romeo Doubs with another concussion. Center Josh Myers with a possible fractured leg. And what happened to receiver Jaden Reed?
I dislocated my shoulder. So, I tried to go back in, but after I realized I physically couldn't, the trainers did a great job of taking me to go get x-ray and everything.
So the Eagles advance, and they'll play the winner of tonight's game between the Vikings and the Rams. I spoke to Eagles running back Saquon Barkley.
That's football, man. They're a good team. You got to credit to them. They did some good things. They're a well-coached team. Got a lot of great players. But at the end of the day, stats don't matter. Only stats that matter is that win column.
NBA, the Bucks' three-game winning streak snapped with a 140-106 loss to the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It is chilly out there this morning. The wind chill from 5 to 10 below, and we're going to keep that wind chill around or a little below zero here for a good chunk of the day today. Sunshine, 16 this afternoon. Tonight will drop down to 2 above tomorrow. Mostly sunny, 17. We're back to 25 on Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temperature, 13.
I'm looking forward to Halloween. Man, I love it because I'm big now and I can beat up kids and get their candy. What? Because when I was small, I almost died trick-or-treating. Because I had asthma. And you know your parents buy you that cheap mask? The cheap plastic one? You can barely breathe in it? And that band in the back of your head making you bleed through your skull? And you know they can't hear you saying trick-or-treat. And how much air did they give us in the mask, that little slot? And you would stick your tongue down. And then you would cut your tongue because that was razor sharp. And they say it's that razors in the apples. No, it's your mask!
YMCA. I belong to the YMCA. It's really a great place to belong to, and it, you know, helps a lot of people. There's so much to do there, and we're going to find more about the YMCA that's no longer in Racine. It's the building's there, but that's about it. My guest is Charlie Tennyson. He made an excellent documentary, an hour-long documentary on basically the rise and fall of the YMCA. It's called Lakefront, the Third YMCA. Now, I'm not originally from the area, but there were actually two more before this one, right? There were two different ones. And by the way, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
Charlie.
Good morning, Don. Thanks so much for having me, and hope you're doing well in this cold morning. The YMCA and Racine is an interesting and long history. In researching the film, I found mentions of the YMCA, I think, into the 1860s, so way back when. And the current organization was organized in the 1870s. Currently celebrating their 150th anniversary. And it's just been a huge organization, big impact in the Racine community, beneficial, really doing good stuff for a long, long time in many different ways. And I've been a part-time employee and member of the Y here in Racine since about 2005.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that part.
Yeah. So I watched the lakefront building close, and I just was very struck by how it changed and how its relationship to the community changed. And also I felt bad that it closed and it was so important for so long, but we didn't have any way to think about it or observe its passing or really mourn for it, because it's almost traumatic the way that we've lost it.
Now, where were the other two, do you know, in Racine?
Yeah, so the YMCA organization has owned three major buildings downtown over the years, and many other ones. But the first one was built in the 1880s, and that building is still there. It's on the corner of 6th Street and College Avenue. And if you stand on College Avenue and look up high in the frieze, you can see it says YMCA.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
And if you're on 6th Street and you look up and it says 1886, don't quote me, but I think that's the year it was built.
Yeah, a lot of these old buildings still have the original dedication stones in them.
Yeah.
Now, they make them low now, but back they used to make them high on the buildings.
Right.
So the dedication stones, they didn't take them off. And good, I'm glad they didn't take them off.
Yeah. So that was our first YMCA. And then somewhere in the teens, we moved to a building that's still there on 4th Street. And that we occupied until, I'm saying we, the YMCA, until around 1959, 1960.
That's where the newspaper is, Journal Times, right?
Next to it. And that building also is more or less empty right now. I don't think there's any use of it for several years.
Then in 1960, this building was dedicated on the lakefront. And in your thing, it mentioned in your movie, it was the largest YMCA in the world.
Yeah, they're saying per capita. And by that, they mean not only the building, but the organization. During the middle of the 1970s, when they made that claim, the YMCA actually had claimed to have 12 locations around the city doing different things. They had drum and bugle corps, all kinds of different clubs. They supported clubs like the Kiwanis and the Rotary and things like that. They were using the space. Just incredible impact on our community.
Before we get to the sad part, and there's a sad part to this. It's real sad. And I was, although I'm not from the area, I was here for many, many years, and I know the why. I've been there, exercising and everything, and you know, going around the potholes in the parking lot. I was there. I remember that. My wife, I told you, used to work there at the Y. She did the aerobics, swimming aerobics at the Y. So I think everybody's got a link to that YMCA and down on the lakefront. Let's talk about some of the fun things with it that I never knew. I never knew there was a dance club in there. The Yardbirds, Tommy James and the Shondells, they all played there at that one. Who knew that?
Yeah, that period of the 1950s and 60s.
Who knew?
And you're a rock and roll guy, so you know this, but that's before the stadium era. So where did bands play? They played in kind of mid-sized clubs. And the Racine YMCA was one of the stops, you know, especially because it's between Milwaukee and Chicago. So if a band had an extra night, they would stop in Racine and do a big show. And so Buffalo Springfield played there, you know.
Buffalo Springfield. That's with, you mentioned the Phillies, not with Eric Clapton. It was after Eric Clapton. Oh, the Yardbirds was after Eric Clapton. Jimmy Page was the Yardbirds at the time.
And that's what kind of floored me. And when I heard Jimmy Page played there, that's kind of when I got the movie
idea. That's pre-Led Zeppelin, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just like, what? Can I see you say that again?
That's like having the Beatles in. Yeah,
Craig told me that, Craig Audie. So he said, yeah, and I had to look it up because I didn't believe him.
Okay, so all these bands, how big was the dance club? How can they afford these big groups?
Yeah, I mean, you would usually pay a dollar. And when it got big, they would use the gymnasium. And they were claiming up to 3,000 admissions per weekend. So the band would get a couple thousand dollars for coming through.
You know, it's funny you mention that because my brother played with the biggest groups of the 1960s. He was a guitarist. He played with the Shirelles, the Chiffons, Ruby and the Romantics, Benny King, the Shangri-Las. He played with all those groups. And one group he was working with one night was Strawberry Alarm Clock. Remember them?
No, I don't have that one.
Incense Peppermints, big hit.
Good name.
They played a gymnasium, and they had the top song in the country at the time, and they played a gymnasium at a high school. Yeah. Because they didn't have the stadiums, you're right.
And it's interesting, the Racine was actually a teen club, so I don't think people in their 20s were even allowed. It was just for the local kids. And that's the theme that, of course, Young Man's Christian Association is what it stands for, but the young stayed for a long time. And by the 60s, it's boys and girls, but young people.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. With the time that was built, it was actually built in 1959. It opened in 1960. The dedication was there. Were women allowed in there in 1960?
I don't know. Actually, not very much. They were there for social activities, but it wasn't. They weren't part of the gym or physical activities at that time. There wasn't a girls' room, for instance.
Now they do have YWCAs, but I don't know if there were any in Racine. Were there?
We had a YWCA. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the last thing that they were running that I know about was what became Riverbend Nature Center. Yeah. I think the YWCA is still around.
Okay, so they built this one to replace the one that was on 4th Street.
Yeah.
And the one on 4th Street couldn't have been that big. Now they have one, I don't know if it's still there, but it was Staten, Maine, where Jimmy John's is.
Oh.
They opened up a smaller version of the Y there. And I don't know if it's still open.
Yeah, that's a storefront. So that's what's left of the downtown YMCA experience. Well, of course, the Bray Center, too. But you can still go work out. Just next to Jimmy John's, and it's a storefront with exercise equipment. So.
And we're going to talk about some of the people in the documentary, and we're going to talk about the fall.
Yeah,
because it's sad. It's always sad when you see something that was so vibrant in the community that people depended on. It was a center of activity and gathering. gone. Because what's really sad is you, in your documentary, you have all the photographs of when it was vibrant with people enjoying the swimming, the exercising, the concerts, and just the gathering of people.
It was incredible.
And now you take a look at the graffiti on the inside. It's boarded up. And you look around and you say, is this the same place where all this activity? It was kind of sad watching. We were glued. We put it on our big screen. And I was glued to this thing. And my wife had to get up for a second. Pause this thing. You know, we don't want to miss a second of it. The documentary is called Lakefront, the Third YMCA. The writer, producer, director, Charlie Tennyson. He's our guest here. More coming up in just a moment at 7:16. Local news and timeless hits here at WRJN.
Begin your day with a special treat from Main Street Bakery in downtown Racine. Their bakery team crafts delightful donuts, muffins, and pastries, all bursting with fresh fruit and flavor. Plus, indulge in the new mini dessert cups, perfectly sized for a quick bite. Mix and match flavors like cookies and cream, cherry cheesecake, and Mississippi mud pie. Whether you're sweetening your morning or needing an afternoon treat, Main Street Bakery is ready to brighten your day. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Main Street Bakery, where every creation is crafted with care.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Audrey Hepburn is considered one of the greatest movie stars of all time. Ariana Grande is just getting started with her big screen career comparatively, but there are rumors that she might play the iconic classic Hollywood Oscar winner in an upcoming biopic. Nothing has been confirmed, but it sounds like the Wicked actress is really interested in such a role, telling Access Hollywood that she has always been enamored with old Hollywood. Speaking of Grande, Wicked was just released on video on demand, and it's no surprise that one of the biggest movies of 2024 is seeing sales through the roof. The film is now available to stream in the U.S. and Canada. Wicked pulled in $26 million on its first day of digital release, according to Variety, and ended up with $70 million after its first week. The nice thing about watching Wicked at home is you will not have strangers standing up and singing along. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Fountain Hills Apartment in Racine has an incredibly rare opening of a one-bedroom apartment with a special extended 15-month lease. Fountain Hills in Mount Pleasant was named number one for senior living by senioradvisor.com. With amenities like on-site management and heated parking, Fountain Hills' top priority is safety with a locked lobby and thorough cleaning. Grab this rare one-bedroom apartment today at fountainhillsapartments.com or call 262-886-9200 right away.
Have you outgrown your health insurance plan? The number one reason we all change our health insurance is price. Are you paying too much for your health insurance? Would you like to have better coverage at a better rate? Take a few minutes right now and find out if you can save money or even qualify for zero-cost health insurance in your state. Call now.
800-693-9308. 800-693-9308. That's 800-693-9308.
Hey folks, this is Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. We have all stopped at a convenience store for a necessity or two. A bottle of water, a half a gallon of milk, or a bag of pickle-flavored potato chips. I mean, those are necessities in your house too, right? But there is a cost for that kind of convenience, as much as 54% more. Now, when I was in my early 20s, like some of you, I may have done most of my shopping at the 7-Eleven around the corner from my apartment. And boy, oh boy, I wish I had known that shopping regularly at convenience stores instead of supermarkets meant I was paying a lot more for my groceries. A National Institute of Health survey recently found that milk can cost 11 to 14% more at those stores. Apples and bananas, 10 to 53% more. And cereal can cost as much as 54% more. So, for your regular food shopping, keep more money in your wallet and head on over to the supermarket. For more tips on saving, text MONEY to 88285. This is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Everyone looks forward to the weekend, and at WRJN, we're no different. Saturday morning features Rick Johnson with his Capsule Countdown. 10 songs with a common theme, counted down in rapid-fire fashion at 8:30 and 9:30. Terry Hovel with Rock and Roll Never Forgets from 10 to 2. And Sunday morning, Lou Regani features the music of the stars from 7 till noon. It's the perfect weekend soundtrack. WRJN.
Our guest is Charlie Tennyson. He wrote and directed and produced his own movie. That's good when you can do that. The documentary called Lakefront, the third YMCA. And this is the one we're talking about on the lakefront that's now abandoned. And you know what's really sad when you see this? When they start putting the fencing around it.
Yeah, yeah, that makes it look,
It look like it's ready for demolition. They always put the keep people out. And in the movie, you do interviews in front of the building with all the graffiti and the boarding up. The boarding up is always sad.
It is sad. Yeah, it is sad.
But you did, and you had a live band playing there. Yeah, you must have had two bands because they were different people.
Yeah, two different bands. Yep.
Two different bands were playing there. Who are they?
Yeah. Stephen Hull agreed to do the opening song. And it was spectacular. He played in front of the YMCA, and I wanted to recreate the Jimmy Page dance feeling from the 60s. I mean, yeah. that vision just stuck with me. So there's music throughout the film, and then the local Kenosha band called the Spirit Shakers do the outro. And you can guess what song they play.
Yes.
and they nail it. It's just absolutely incredible.
You also do an acoustic version of that song.
Yeah, Steven does a very sad acoustic version.
It is sad.
It's incredible.
I know.
Yeah, and it was wonderful that he did that. He was kind of improvising. Steven's a blues musician, and I asked him to play YMCA, and it was probably the last song he would have played. But he's a very generous, amazing musician, and he agreed to do it, and he played it beautifully. It's just incredible.
And you got permission to be on the grounds of the Y, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Okay. We did people to know that he didn't just rip down the fence and get in there.
Yeah.
So, but it is sad to see it. Now, you have a lot of people you're interviewing. One of them I recognize, Jim Messier. He's a regular here. He comes in regular. We talk about the history of Racine.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Now, I noticed who was the guy at the end? He had the keys hanging from him. And he said, you got to pay attention to the dash, 1960 to 20, whatever. Who was that guy?
Van Carson. Yeah.
Now, who is he?
Worked for the YMCA for a while and now works for the city, I think with the same program. I forgot the exact program.
Yeah, I can listen to him forever.
Yeah, beautiful. I think he might moonlight as a preacher or something like that. He's good.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah.
They know how to talk. Now, I noticed you were in one of the meetings with the mayor.
Yes.
So the mayor comes in here all the time. Every month we have the mayor in here. And I'm going to hit. I said you had a cameo role, a non-speaking, non-star-making role in the documentary. Because he is on screen, but he didn't say anything.
Yeah, yeah. And
who was that speaking there at the meeting? Do you remember?
I think one of the assistants there. I don't name the people in the documentary.
I know. I noticed you didn't have any names on them.
I'm very grateful to everyone who appeared. I find... Because it's sad, and I think it didn't end the way everyone wanted it to. A lot of people haven't said anything about it, and I think, like I said, I'm going back to the trauma in the community. The more we talk about it, the better. I wanted to, so I don't name people. And I did ask the mayor to appear in the film, and he politely declined.
But he was in it.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
A non-speaking role.
Non-speaking role. Yeah.
And he's not. I don't think there's many Academy Award nominations for the role. But he was good. He was on screen. He looked good.
He looked good.
Yeah, he looked good. And he looked concerned, and that's good. That's important.
You need that.
Okay. The Fall of the Y. We're on the other side of Paul Harvey. We'll have to talk about the rest of it, but get the rest of the story, as they say. When did the fall start? Now, it was built. It was dedicated and opened in 1960. When did it start to go downhill where everybody knew eventually this is it?
That's a good question. I don't know that I'm going to punt on that. It's been in decline for 10 or 15 years. If you look closely, you can see the seeds of its own destruction in 1960 because the building was so big and grand. It's no longer fitting the mission today. For instance, it had a 100-room dormitory in it. And, that's empty space that has to be maintained, and nobody wants to run a dormitory at a YMCA anymore. I don't think any YMCAs do that anymore. So it's almost like they're the current organization inherits this building that costs a lot of money to keep open, and yet... The way that the donor pool is and the membership has drifted west of the city, that they just can't keep it running anymore. So it's hard to pin that. To me, what are the reasons that the YMCA closed? Well, give me a sheet of paper, number from 1 to 25, and I'll start telling you what the reasons are.
And things change. Yeah. Things change. Not everything's forever. When I worked downtown Milwaukee at a radio station at 7th and Wisconsin Avenue, right across the street was the YMCA.
Yes.
big giant building.
Yeah.
And one of our announcers lived there. He was kind of a flaky guy. You didn't want to be alone. You know, he came in at night and it was like everybody out of the building. But he lived at the Y, and that's where he lived. He lived in that giant building downtown. Now, is that, I don't think that's the Y anymore, is it?
I think Marquette bought that building.
Marquette bought it for dorms. Yeah.
So they repurposed it.
Yeah. So you're right. So there's no more dormitory YMCAs. There's no money in it.
Yeah. And one of the themes I really wanted to tell is just how much hard work it is to maintain communities and things that are important to communities. So,
well, one guy in there said he paid 200 something a month to live there. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can't live in a bad hotel for that kind of money.
Right, with a lake view. It was incredible.
Yeah, he said, yeah, do I have one of the street view of the lake? I'm looking at the lake every morning for $200-some-odd a month.
Yeah, that's back in the 90s, I think.
Now, they had no maid service, housekeeping service,
did they? I don't know.
I mean, $200-some-odd, I'll move in there for $200-some-odd. Yeah. All right, hold in there. Charlie Tennyson, he is the director, producer, writer of Lakefront. The third YMCA, and if you were a member of the Y or you went to the Y downtown, listen up. It even gets better, so keep it right here. Local news, timeless hits, WRGN, and right now it's time for Paul Harvey.
Now, the rest of the story. In 1972, some Hampton, Virginia businessmen embarked on a joint venture to promote a major public event to help finance the community's newly opened Coliseum. Now, these fellows had never done anything like this before, but they were certain that they'd come up with a surefire moneymaker, a guest speaker from out of town, some local politicians. How could they help but attract a huge audience? But then a week prior to the planned event, the promoters suddenly realized there was more to promoting than they had ever imagined. A call to the Coliseum box office revealed that only a handful of tickets had been sold, not even enough to cover the speaker's fee, which the planners had paid in advance. A financial disaster seemed inevitable, but this is the rest of the story. The promoters, in a panic now, paid a personal call on a local newspaper editor and told him what had happened. They explained that there was no money left in their project budget for advertising and how an empty hall would reflect badly on the entire community. Would the Newport News please run a free ad for the event to help them sell more tickets? Well, the editor, Harry Covert, sat back and he thought for a moment. Then he told the promoters he would run their ad, but what they really needed, he said, was an opening act, something so popular among townsfolk that they could not resist attending the event. He remembered there was a children's television show broadcast on WYAH. It was hosted by a couple of young puppeteers who put on skits and sang songs and talked to the youngsters in the studio audience, programmed somewhat like Chicago's renowned Kukla, Fran, and Ollie show. And in Hampton, Virginia, it was quite as enthusiastically received. So Harry Covert suggested if those popular puppeteers could be engaged to appear, then local children would want to come. And the children would bring their parents with them. They might even fill the Coliseum. How much money would those young puppeteers want, the promoters wondered? Well, there was only one way to find out. And newspaper man Harry Covert called him on the phone. He explained the situation to this couple of youngsters. Now, they were making $100 a week apiece those days, working on television locally. But he explained that there just was no more money in the budget. Yet the community's pride was at stake. Without further hesitation, the puppeteers agreed to appear at no charge. They suggest they would appear for free. Well, their appearance made the difference. The evening of the big Coliseum event, these two children's show stars greeted and entertained and sang to and with the thousands of youngsters, and the youngsters brought their parents, and the guest speaker spoke, and everybody went home to live happily ever after. Almost everybody. In 1972, now let me explain that utter objectivity in what I'm relating is impossible in the reiteration of what is a true tale, because that night in 1972, the featured speaker, not then so well known in Hampton, Virginia, was Paul Harvey. He was the speaker who had failed to draw the crowd. and the popular puppeteers who bailed him out by helping to fill that cavernous coliseum were Jim and Tammy Baker. And now, you know the rest of the story.
Hey, there's another rest of the story coming up with Dan Marcus, 12:05 this afternoon here in WRJN. To learn how your business can be a sponsor of one of the most popular radio shows ever to air on WRJN, call us during business hours, 262-634-3311, 262-634-3311. Let's check news, 7:30 on the dot. Here's Stuart.
From the WRJN Radio Park Newsroom, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Kenosha's got one in February. Racine might have one in April. Tonight, the Racine Unified School Board will ponder placing a $190 million operational referendum on the April 1st ballot. Like in Kenosha, Racine officials say a lack of state funding has led to financial problems. However, declining enrollment is also playing a part. The proposal would result in a tax increase of about $75 a year for the owner of a $200,000 home. District officials are already warning that if not passed, there could be widespread cuts to staff and programs. Neighborhoods in Racine that are still dealing with snowy roads are seeing some trucks. This morning, City of Racine DPW trucks were out trying to scrape off snow as cold temperatures sit in and make it crunchy. Wind chills are below zero with warming centers open in most communities. To find one near you, call 211. We'll have the latest coming up in the forecast. And there's no better time than the dead of winter to think about greenery. Both Racine and Kenosha counties have their tree and shrub sales programs up and running. Officials in Kenosha County just opened their store, offering people an affordable opportunity to purchase native trees and shrub seedlings. The program sells bundles with a diverse selection of evergreens, hardwoods, and shrubs available on a first-come, first-served basis. You can find online store links on each county's respective websites. And that's news on WRJN. I'm Stuart J. Waddles. News at the top and bottom of the hour, or anytime at WRJN.com.
Ballots are all in when it comes to federal milk marketing orders and their future. I'm PM Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Monday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. One of our University Extension dairy research specialists paying attention to the final count. Details next.
What makes Dairyland seed silage unique? Better. Designed specifically to maximize tonnage potential in the upper Midwest, Dairyland Seed silage products contain higher starch content and the highest level of fiber digestibility for optimized milk production. And to help get even more milk in the tank, these elite genetics are supported by your dedicated local dealer and direct access to a team of leading agronomists and silage experts. Better silage, better support, better results. That's the Dairyland Seed difference. Meet our 2025 lineup at DairylandSeedSilage.com.
Leonard Polzin is our University Extension Dairy Market and Policy Outreach Specialist, and he says all the ballots are in. Now it's just a matter of finalizing the count.
Ballots have to be received by USDA by January 15th, so they had to be postmarked by December 31st. So all of the voting has taken place, waiting to receive ballots, and then once those ballots are received, the tallying process takes place. Once that happens, there will be an announcement that comes out, and it's important to note that there will be a period in between the announcement and when implementation takes place. So 30 days before implementing these changes, USDA will put out an announcement so that way industry and folks can plan accordingly.
Leonard Polzin, University Extension Dairy Market and Policy Outreach Specialist. He reminds dairy producers that the ballots were cast to basically either keep federal milk marketing orders in place or do away with them entirely. Again, as he pointed out, we should have the final decision before the end of the month. Markets look firm in overnight electronic trade. The numbers are next.
Pests are trying to turn parts of the corn belt into the corn rootworm belt. But DeKalb brand says, not on our watch. Crush corn rootworm with DeKalb brand SmartStax Pro with RNAi technology. It's the outstanding yield potential of DeKalb corn with advanced protection against corn rootworm. When pest pressure is highest, hit back your hardest. Talk to your DeKalb representative. Never settle. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
In overnight electronic trade on a Monday morning, right now we've got March corn up three at 473, December new crop up a penny and a half at 452. March beans are up eight, 1033, November new crop up a nickel, 1036. March wheat's up seven at 538, July new crop up a nickel, 560. Friday, the barrel cheese dropped 2 cents to 185. 40-pound block cheese dropped 7¾ cents on Friday to 182. This morning, the February class 3 milk that goes into cheese down 13 cents. At 2014 a hundredweight. There's a quick market snapshot for you on a Monday morning. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke.
It is chilly out there this morning. The wind chill from 5 to 10 below, and we're going to keep that wind chill around or a little below zero here for a good chunk of the day today. Sunshine, 16 this afternoon. Tonight will drop down to 2 above tomorrow. Mostly sunny, 17. We're back to 25 on Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside right now, it's 12.
It's not always winter. There's spring. People love spring. That's a fun day. What a lie spring is, right? I spend the entire spring waiting for it to be spring, right? You're like, is it spring? No, it's snowing. Next day, you're like, is it spring? No, it's 90 degrees. I guess we miss those tiny white flowers.
Tennyson is here. He's the director, writer, producer. You probably carried your own equipment too, right?
Yeah, I did. I had very little help.
So you did everything. Okay. The movie is called, the documentary is called Lakefront, the Third YMCA. Now we're talking about it. And how do people see this? Because it doesn't have any release yet. How are you going to get this out to the public?
Yeah, we're going to do local showings. It's very important to me that it be presented to the community and that we can see the movie and then experience our remembrances of the YMCA together as a group. So it will stream eventually, but not right now. Two showings are scheduled right now at George's Encore.
Right down the block from where I live, yeah.
On Thursday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. And also at the Racine Heritage Museum, we'll show it Thursday, February 6th at 5 p.m.
Okay, we got to write this down because I got to keep repeating. Oh, there you got it. Can I have this? Okay. At George's Encore, right there on Main Street by near the Jane School. And that'll be Thursday, January 23rd. That's like next week, right?
Yep.
Yeah. A week from this Thursday, 7 p.m. at the Racine Heritage Museum, Thursday, February 6th at 5 p.m. That's how I got your name from Chris Paulson over there.
Yeah, Chris and the museum have been great. And those are free showings, by the way. And we're going to do one at the library, but that has not been scheduled yet, so...
That's great. You got to get it out there. That's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, I want. It's for the community, and it's for us to. I would feel terrible. I think it's a tragedy how it closed and that it is closed. But it would be more of a tragedy if we didn't learn anything from it.
Well, you know what? While I'm watching this, I said to my wife, "This is a historical document. You can't get rid of these things because once you do, people don't remember them anymore." They'll say, yeah, there was a building down there. I don't know what it was. What was it? YMCA. I don't know anything about it. This will keep it in people's minds forever. We do a program here on WRJN called Historical Markers, the Historical Markers. And I'm getting people who used to work here years ago because, you know, we're not going to live forever. So I'm getting to do 1 hour with all the memories they can of the radio station. We're going to save them. The library I spoke to, the Racine, they're going to try to save it in their archives.
Good.
And we're trying to figure out how to save this because it was the 70s, it would be on cassette. In the 80s, it would be on CD. In the 90s and beyond, it would be on a memory stick. What do you save it on for the future?
So yeah, that's a problem.
We put it on the cloud for now, and they could do whatever they want with it for the future. And I spoke to Chris Paulson. We're going to do a 100th year anniversary. We have 100th year in 2 years from now with WRJ, and we're going to do a whole big thing there. Because you got to preserve these things because if people forget, it's gone forever. And I think your documentary is an historical marker. This will be remembered because that building's not going to be there forever. They're going to knock it down one of these days and build.
Yeah, it's coming down.
Build condos or whatever there. And so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The fall of the downtown Y because there's a new one in Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Beautiful.
It's no dormitories. It's just working out.
Yeah.
That's it.
Did they have a pool in that one?
Oh, they got a beautiful, spectacular pool.
Because I've been there. I just forgot.
Yeah, summer programs, camp for the kids, a lot of kid stuff after hours. It's become the pickleball capital of Mount Pleasant during the day. The gym is nothing but pickleball players.
I heard it, never seen it, don't know what it is, never played it.
It's a great place.
I don't like pickles, so anything with the word pickles in it kind of turns me off. I get that smell in my head. Let's talk about the downtown YMCA. Because this one, is it accessible by bus? Because this one is very accessible downtown. Buses, people, a lot of people live there. Is it accessible?
The new one?
Yeah.
If you have a car.
That's it, though. No bus routes or anything like that.
I don't think so. It might be on a bus. I don't take the buses. But it doesn't serve the original urban community that the YMCA was started in 1874.
It's like no movie theaters are downtown anymore. I mean, last ones are gone.
Downtowns are different. They've changed.
And we're going to talk about that in a few weeks with Jim Messier.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So it closed down. Who made the decision to shut it down?
I think the board and the CEO at the time made the decision. I actually don't get into that in the film, but it was the doors closed in 2019.
Now, over the end of the film, you mentioned it was sold to the city. The city bought it for $12,500.
Yeah.
Now, you might say, what a bargain, lakefront property. It's going to cost them a fortune to take it down.
I heard a couple million.
When you hear, oh, they bought it for $12,000, I would have bought it for $12,000. Yeah, do you have a couple of million to remove it? The cost of the property was nothing. The cost of cleaning it up and getting rid of everything. Did you ever hear a mention of what they want to do with it? Does that ever come across your
plate? I mean, the city purchased it with the intention of tearing it down and repurposing the property. And I think that was done because the YMCA organization didn't have the capacity to do that themselves. And it was for sale forever. And they never got a taker, so...
Because of the cost of getting rid of it.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if it was all gone, it was leveled landing, you sold it for $12,000, I'd buy it.
Yeah, you'd think.
I'll put a bid. I'll tell you what, I'll make it $13,000. How's that?
It's
asking price. Yeah. Okay. Now, there was, at one time, an artist conception to rebuild it, rebuild the whole building there. And I saw you have it in the film, the artist's drawing, and it's spectacular. Modern, sleek, it looks great. And you mentioned in the film, at the last second, boom, they stopped it. And with just a few minutes to go, they put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, the YMCA had a plan to sell it to a developer, and the developer was going to own the new property, but then lease the first floor as a YMCA back to the organization. And the property would be primarily condos or apartments, that kind of a thing. And beautiful, right on the lake. And that deal fell through for reasons unknown.
Literally minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it was going to be signed. But we don't know why it fell through, do we?
Yeah, I mean, business deals are business deals. Yeah. And really, and when I think about it, I think about longer term, because these things take place over decades and years, and somehow, unfortunately, this building found itself just in a corner that it couldn't get out of. There were no good options left. I think those our organizations and our institutions, we need to think long term to try to avoid things like this in the future.
How long did it take you to make the documentary?
About a year and a half.
It takes that long, yeah.
Yeah, it was a situation where I was so struck by the story. And I talked to every filmmaker that I knew in Racine, and I said, hey, you got to make this documentary. And no one was interested. And then I realized I had to do it because I was the only one who wanted to do it. So, I wasn't unable to raise any money. So I just worked alone with a couple cameras. And I just asked everyone that I could think of to tell me a story about the YMCA. I interviewed maybe 20, 25 people. And I didn't count, but I think maybe 10 of them made the cut for the actual interviews in the film.
I recognize some of them.
Yeah, yeah. Every
I can't think of their names, but I recognize the faces.
Yeah, when you come, you will recognize some faces, and they're us. They're the community.
Got to talk about in the film. You mention it about the death of the character guy who lived around there. They called him Captain Kirk. His name was Kirk.
Yeah,
and you mentioned, I guess they found his dead body there. Was it inside or outside the Y?
Just on the door, on the steps. Yeah, he was living. Many folks in the last few years, have been squatting in and out of the in and around the YMCA. And
this is after it closed.
After it closed, yeah, yeah. Although I believe they were sneaking in there even while it was still open. It's a huge building.
You mentioned the doors were pried open. Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned that in the film. They pried the doors open to the Y, and they would live in there. Even when it was functioning, they used to sneak in?
I think a little bit, yeah.
Isn't there any security in that building? You'd think there would be at the front door when people are...
Right.
I guess there wasn't.
It's just a big building, and with a small staff, it was hard to police. So
wow. So this guy, Kirk, one of the guys mentioned he overdosed. I don't know what happened to him, but I heard one of the people who you were talking to said he overdosed. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But it made the papers.
Yep.
Yeah. It made all the news that this guy just died on the doorstep of the YMCA.
Yeah, and it's a very sad part of the story, and I hope I told that part respectfully.
You did.
Yeah.
And you showed a nice picture of him at the end.
Yeah, he was a real person, and of course, the thing you go to is, would he have died if the Y was still open? Could they have helped him or not? But it wasn't no longer there. And to me, he's kind of symbolic of the people that we can't serve, the YMCA can't serve anymore because their mission is diminished and moved and not as big as it once was.
So. Yeah, not in no living dorms anymore.
Yeah.
Hold on there. We're talking to Charlie Tennyson. His movie is Lakefront, the third YMCA. We're going to review where it's going to be shown. We'll talk about that. Plus, I have some other things I want to discuss. You made some other documentaries as well.
Yes, I did.
We talk about those as well. It's all coming up right here at WRJN. Local news, timeless hits.
Are your auto and home insurance rates too high? Then call the folks at Bain's AAA Insurance Agency to see if they can help save you money. Licensed in both Wisconsin and Illinois, they have been in business since 2014, serving the Racine, Mount Pleasant, Kenosha, and surrounding areas. Bain's AAA has sold thousands of customers, AAA road service, auto, homeowners, condo, renters, life, and umbrella insurance, plus personalized service to fit your family's ever-evolving needs with competitive rates. Call Annette today at 262-672-4702.
Coverage is subject to all policy terms, conditions, exclusions, and limitations. Discounts and savings opportunities subject to eligibility requirements, subject to underwriting requirements. AAA Insurance is a collection of AAA-branded insurance products, services, and programs made available to qualified members. Personal lines insurance is underwritten by Auto Club Group Insurance Company, Auto Club Insurance Association, and AAA Life Insurance Company.
Are you or a loved one facing a serious illness? Feel better, worry less with Hospice Alliance's supportive care management. It's a special kind of palliative care that helps manage symptoms to improve quality of life while providing guidance and support. When seeking hospice care, ask for Hospice Alliance, the award-winning community-based nonprofit that gives back through education, services, and grief support. To learn more, visit hospicealliance.org. That's hospicealliance.org.
Whether you're tinkering in your garage or tackling big projects, if you know the value of working with your hands, you know Harbor Freight. And you can be confident knowing that at Harbor Freight, you can get quality tools at prices that work just as hard as you do. Because the only thing more satisfying than a job well done is a job well done, well under budget. Whatever you do, do it for less at Harbor Freight.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max. Face the three. Takes the three. Left side. Yes, sir.
Pivots.
Fades. Flips. Good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up. Got it. With the right hand. It counts and it foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Slam dunk. Steven Crow hammers it down.
Catch every game all season long right here on the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
WRJN. We're talking to Charlie Tennyson, whose documentary Lakefront, the third YMCA, is going to be viewed at, you got a couple of viewing parties here, George's Encore. That's at 1201 North Main Street. That'll be Thursday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. Also, the Racine Heritage Museum, we know that is 701 Main Street in Racine. That'll be Thursday, February 6th at 5 p.m. Do you have to get tickets in advance? How does that work?
No, first come, first serve, just and show it's up? A free showing, yeah.
Free show? Oh, good. Just show up. And it runs, so it's a little over an hour.
Yeah.
But it's very good. I mean, it seems like 10 minutes when you watch it. When you see a good movie, you know, you go to a three-hour movie, say, oh, I don't know if I can watch this for 3 hours. But you do, and you say, oh, that was 3 hours?
Yeah.
But then you watch an hour and a half movie. God, what was that, 4 hours? It's a bad movie.
Yeah, I think for local people who are interested in the story, this is
good.
Goes down very easy. Yeah, it's all fascinating.
My wife loved it, and it made her angry at the end.
Yeah.
When she saw the demise of, because she worked there.
Yeah.
But you made other documentaries.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of those.
Yeah, my first documentary is called 25 Weeks, A Wisconsin Pizza Harvest. And it was about the process of making a pizza from a bag of grain. So in the beginning of the movie, I plant the grain in my field. I'm a farmer, a wheat farmer. And then we watch it grow, and some of it doesn't grow, and we talk about that. Then at the end, it is a reasonably successful harvest, and I grind it into flour and make a pizza, and we end with a pizza.
I love it. So where's that hanging around, that documentary?
It's available on YouTube. If you search for 25 Weeks of Wisconsin Pizza Harvest.
25 Weeks. Okay. Yeah. What else?
And then the second movie I made is called Night of the Living Harvest. And that's more about my the homestead that I live on. I live on 4 acres, and most of the food that I eat, I grow. And most of the power on the farm comes from the 3 donkeys that I keep. So they plow my field and disc it and things like that. So
I know where you said you live. I'm not going to tell anybody, but you told me where you live. You have 3 donkeys there, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you allowed to keep them there?
Well, yeah, Mount Pleasant's incredible. I'm on 4 acres, and when I bought the place, they said, well, you have 4 acres, you can have 4 horses, because it's 1 acre per horse. So it's a lovely little spot. Lovely little spot. Zoned agricultural. And I've been very, very happy there. So one great, great community.
I kind of drive by there and listen to me.
Yeah, they're pretty quiet, but you can come say hi sometime.
I saw a video somebody posted on the Reels on Facebook, and it's a baby donkey, and it's their pet. And the baby donkey is cradled in her arms and goes to sleep in her arms. And I said, oh, that is so adorable. You know,
they're wonderful animals. Just wonderful.
All animals. There was one where, I think it was a baby gorilla He was trying to show off for the camera, and he's like waving around, and he falls. But he falls like a few inches into hay.
Yeah.
The mother jerks up for what she was doing, runs over to him.
Really?
Because all mothers are the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Their babies are in trouble, and they run. We don't think about animals like that, but they are. They're just like
the instinct is the same, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Not fathers, for some reason. The fathers never run over to help their baby. It's always the mothers.
Why is that?
I know. It's always the mothers that do it. Okay, so those three. Now, you did this all out of your own money, out of your own pocket.
Yeah, the first 2 movies, I was able to raise some money. The third one, I didn't. Well, I tried, but there were no takers.
So how do you afford this?
Is it
expensive to make it? Because I noticed your equipment. I could see you had multiple cameras set up.
Yeah. So for this film, I did buy a second camera, because then when I'm doing a sit down interview, I've got different cameras to pop to, and it makes it a little bit more interesting. The costs, I mean, once you own the equipment, it's fairly minimal. And we live in an amazing age of digital filmmaking, because, you know, for a couple $1,000, you can have a editing station that would have cost $1 million, you know.
And plus the film stock would have cost a fortune.
Exactly,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. So time doesn't cost anything. It just fills up a space on the card. And the cameras used on eBay, you know, are a couple $1,000 a piece. So it's a moderately expensive hobby.
It doesn't look like it on film, though. Well, your movie doesn't look like it.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah.
Look like it was made on the cheap at all.
Yeah, the quality that you can achieve just by being meticulous. And I'm a lifelong photographer, so I know how to expose things and frame things.
How did you get, did you use drones to get some of these shots?
Yeah, the opening and closing are drone shots. And again, that's like an $800 drone. An observer would have noticed that I was walking around downtown for the whole summer, because I wanted the sun to be just right. It's a 2-minute shot in the film, but to do it, I think I flew the drone 10 or 15 times to just, because we fly around downtown showing the 3 YMCAs and kind of setting up the story.
have to watch it again.
Yeah.
Now knowing some of this. Also, all the photographs you have a million historical photographs.
Oh, they're incredible. They're incredible.
Where'd you get them all?
Yeah, our wonderful library, our wonderful museum, and also from the YMCA archives. So
that's got to be time consuming.
Yeah, I think I scanned about 1,000. And again, you go through them, and I suppose 75 made the cut in the actual film. But
it's funny, you could see from the people, the haircuts, the styles, the bathing suits. You know what year they're talking about.
Exactly.
A lot of 70s stuff in there. I said to my wife, I smell the 70s. I mean, you could see just the hairstyles and everything else in there.
Yeah, it was great. And I hope that no matter what we generate out of the film, that we can remember that the building was a rousing success. I mean, what it was built for, it succeeded, and it just stopped for some reason. But for what it was 60 years of, well, 50 years of amazement, you know, just amazing, amazing stuff.
How are they going to take that building down?
I don't know.
I mean, because there's stuff around it. It's not like in Vegas where they implode these hotels.
Yeah.
And they have a big thing where a guy pushes a button and implodes in. I mean, you're downtown. You can't have all this dust and debris, and who knows what's in that building. 1960s, could be asbestos in there.
Probably.
Who knows? I mean, how do you, I got to see how they, that's another documentary.
Yeah, somebody else has got to do that. I'm going to be on to another project by then.
So. Okay, where's your next future document? Can you tell us what's on the agenda?
I've been haunting open mics. Music really has become interesting. I might do a documentary about the local open mic scene. So that's one I'm thinking about hard a lot.
I had an author in here. Her name is Rory Graves.
Okay.
And she wrote a book called Haunted Racine. And you don't know what's going on in this town.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you one of them real briefly. It is, it's you know where Ascension is on, was it 14th Street? Or it's right off Main Street.
Okay.
It's an Ascension building. Right across from there is an old school.
Yeah.
And it was built on an old cemetery.
Really?
And it's like Poltergeist. They didn't get all the bodies out.
Wow.
So when the school opened, kids were finding bones and pieces of people.
Someone should make that movie.
That's what I'm talking to you about. That's why you're here. And she has so many stories like that.
Yeah.
About things. And her cover picture is that school. Now, she put the light on in the building, you know, to give it that haunted look. But she's got a book of haunted stories. Even on 6th Street, things went on. It's all over town.
Wow.
And they're true stories. I mean, they did find the bones. These kids were, hey, I got a FEMA. You know, yeah. They find these bones there.
Yeah, I want to see that movie.
And the school, well, it's going to be a Charlie Tennyson film. I'm looking for that.
We can hope.
Yeah. It's like a real-life Poltergeist.
Wow.
But there's so many other stories in the book. Yeah, yeah. Haunted Racine by Rory
Racine's
Graves.
Awesome. And we the more we invest in it, the more we get out of it. So I hope everyone that is listening to this interview this morning, it's a great place. Community requires continuous effort and investment and work. And when it works, it's amazing.
So I played Tommy James at the Shondells this morning, Hanky Panky. The first thing that thought to mind was, they played at the YMCA?
They played at the YMCA.
But you're right. There were no big stadiums and there were no big arenas.
Yep.
Because I saw the Beatles in 1965 at Shea Stadium in New York, and they were not ready for that concert because they used these skinny column speakers and you couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Right.
Because nobody played. Beatles were probably one of the first groups to play a stadium, and they just weren't ready for it. They didn't know how to do it. And now they do, but they didn't know back then. Mm. Well, this is a great film, and we watched it yesterday. He gave me a special little thing I can watch it on. I brought it on my big TV, and the quality is impeccable on that.
Yeah, HD is incredible. It looks amazing on the screen.
I'm glad you did. It is an historical document, and I'm glad you did it because it'll be preserved forever.
Yep.
And I know the people at the Scene Heritage Museum will probably store it there somehow.
I hope so, yep.
Yeah, there's ways to do it now. Charlie, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Don. You're such a pro. This was so much fun.
Okay, so let me just quick review. It's called Lakefront, the Third YMCA. It's going to be played at George. Now, this is just the first two places.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of other places. George's Encore. That's right there at 1201 Main Street. Thursday, January 23rd at 7 p.m. Also at the Racine Heritage Museum downtown at 701 Main. And that'll be Thursday, February 6th at 5 p.m. And you're going to have more places eventually.
Yep.
Got to see it, folks. If it was ever part of your life,
see it.
And it was part of, It's hard to find somebody who's an adult and it wasn't part of their lives.
It touched everyone in the community.
Yeah. And my wife said, I said, didn't you work there? Because, yeah, I was a swimming aerobics instructor. Everybody has a connection.
Everyone's got a story, yep.
And I worked there, dodging. I once went in there and complained about the potholes in the parking lot. I remember that. And the lady at the front desk said, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just lost an axle in your parking lot. You got to fix it. Thank you, Charlie Tennyson.
Thank you, Dan.
And again, the film is Lakefront, the third YMCA. Get a chance, you got to see it, all right? It's 8 o'clock on the noggin. Let's check news.
Local news and timeless hits. WRJN.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Massive wildfires are still burning in and around Los Angeles, and strong Santa Ana winds offer no hope they'll subside anytime soon. Avanti Prasanna grew up in the Palisades.
It's still heartbreaking, even if your house is there, to know that one of the most, what I always thought was one of the most beautiful neighborhoods in Los Angeles is just gone.
The death toll from the fires is up to at least 24. At least 16 are missing. The scorched earth, larger than the entire city of San Francisco. Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti is in Pacific Palisades.
There are now about 5,000 fire personnel assigned to the Palisades fire alone.
A little fire tornado.
And with wind gusts up to 70 miles per hour expected this week, L.A. remains on high alert. Authorities warn that the entire region is at risk. Millions have their bags packed as their fellow Angelenos cope with what's already been.